You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Oh, yeah, we got a really busy next couple of hours here on the show. Talk to Michael Bumpus coming up in a half hour. John Clayton returns at 8:45. Matt Hasselbeck for the entire 9 o'clock hour. So, yeah, we got a lot going on, a lot of people to discuss things with. Get Matt's take and do some more rapid fire with him today as well. Before we do any of that, we're trying to figure out what's going on here with the Seahawks and their defensive coaching spot, which has now come open because they terminated the contract of Ken Norton Jr. yesterday. And one of the names that has emerged is Ed Donatell, who's been the defense coordinator in Denver the last couple of years. So we thought we'd chat with our friend Tyler Palumbus, 104.3 The Fan in Denver. It's our sister station there and, of course, former Seahawks offensive lineman as well. He joins me here in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Tyler, what's going on, my man?
Hey, Mike, it's great to be with you, as always.
Good to have you.
We got drama in Denver, and I want to ask you questions about Russ, but I'll let you ask.
Oh, well, we may have to get there sooner. That's probably the more interesting one. I'm sure they're pining for Russell right now in Denver. But let me start quickly with Ed Donatell, because he was the first outside name that has emerged. Others have as well. He's been there under Vic Fangio. Who's Ed Donatell, and is he somebody that we should be interested in?
Well, you know, I've known Ed for a very long time, really since my second year in the NFL. So I'm very well versed on Ed Donatell. I'll tell you, he is a fantastic human being, and players absolutely love him. I don't just say that about any coach. Of course, we've all had coaches that you just don't connect with on a personal level, and Ed's one of those guys that anybody who comes in contact with him, you walk away feeling like you're connected for life. So I'll start with that. I know that has nothing to do with football, but as a human being, one of the easiest guys to root for that I've ever been around. On the surface, I look at it, and although I say that and I will always root for Ed, I don't necessarily see the fit in Seattle. You know, Ed's been working with Vic Fangio for, gosh, I don't know how many years now, but it's been a long time, and he's been in a 3-4 scheme, and, you know, I'm sure at some point in Ed's background, he's worked in a 4-down scheme, but unless Pete's planning on changing his defensive identity, which is highly unlikely, I mean, you know that Pete runs basically the same defense no matter who his coordinator is, then Ed's going to have to come in, and he's going to have to learn Pete Carroll's defense. So, you know, on the surface, I look at it like, okay, maybe Pete's thinking about doing something radical. Maybe he's thinking about switching to a 3-4 scheme, or he just thinks so highly of Ed that Ed can come in and he can adapt to Pete's defense. So I think on the surface, that would be my biggest concern with it. I mean, he's been in the league forever. He's got tons of respect. He's had a lot of success. He's been Vic Fangio's right-hand man for years and years. And I would imagine if he doesn't get this job, he's going to go wherever Vic is. He was our defensive coordinator in title this year, but Vic was calling plays. So, yeah, that's kind of the background on Ed.
It's interesting, you know, you kind of bring up the 3-4-4-3 thing, and I don't know that I'm the right person to explain it. I tried earlier. Maybe you can help.
Yeah.
You know, Pete always says that it's a 4-3 with 3-4 principles. What does that mean to you, and does that make it easier for somebody to come in from the outside and maybe even be a benefit to come from that system that may, even though it's a different front, might actually share more in common with Pete's defense than it would seem on the surface?
Yeah, no, that's interesting that you say that. I've never heard Pete describe it that way, but I certainly know exactly what he's talking about. You know, basically the defense that Pete has run for years has been a 4-3 under front. So you get a shade 5-9 on the front side, so you get three players to the front side. But then you get that extra walked up linebacker, which makes it feel like it's got a little bit of 3-4 personnel. So, I certainly know what he's talking about there. I mean, on paper, it's certainly going to be listed as a 4-3. In my mind, when I look at, his defense, I just see a 4-3 under front, whereas a traditional 4-3, sorry, I'm using a lot of football lingo.
I like it. No, it's fine.
Right now, but, you know, in a traditional 4-3, you're going to have your three technique to the strong side, so wherever the tight end is. So you'd have a three technique over the right guard's right shoulder, and then you'd have a defensive end over the tight end. And in Pete's defense, you've got three players to that strong side. So it does look like a 3-4 reduced. Holy cow, I'm going deep. this is like so anti-Radio 101, I know.
Hey, Tyler, would you like to be the new Seahawks defensive coordinator? We may be able to bring you in. Seems like you understand this scheme better than anybody. So this may be the future for you. Let me ask you a quick thing or two about Donatel. Can he be creative? That's one of the things that certainly fans and listeners are hoping for from the next coordinator. And one of the things that was not necessarily a strength over the last couple of years, can they bring some creativity to what's happening here?
Well, here's the thing. You know, Pete's always had a defense that is very basic. And you line up in the same formation every single time, and he does what he does, and he doesn't get overly aggressive. You know, he got a little bit more aggressive since they got Jamal bringing some blitzes and everything. But for the most part, it's a pretty boring defense. And Vic Fangio's defense, they run a lot of zone coverage, and they try to not blitz. But this year, they blitzed way more than they have in years past. And part of that was because we just didn't have the pass rush. But I guess my answer to that would be, is Pete Carroll ready to do that? Because I don't care who's the defensive coordinator for Pete Carroll. He's got a system, and he's got a way that he wants to run things. So can Ed be creative? Sure, we were very creative this year. Does Pete Carroll want to be creative? That's the real question, because based off my history and when I've been in the league, he's always done the same thing no matter who his coordinators are.
Talking to Tyler Palumbas, who played here under Pete as an offensive lineman and now works at our sister station, 104.3 The Fan in Denver. If the other last thing here on Donatel, and then we'll move on because I know you want to talk about Ross, and I kind of do too, is the ability to just communicate. And if Pete's not going to make any major changes, the other issue that I think people talked about here this year was, how come the players aren't in the right place? Is something going wrong with the communication? Is that something that could be a strength for him?
Yeah, he's an incredible teacher. You know, I've always viewed Ed, and maybe this will sound a bit of a negative when you're talking about in terms of as a coordinator, but I've always viewed him as like the dream right-hand man. Like he's such an incredible coach that he's not necessarily the most alpha personality, but I think that might be part of what Pete might like about him. But he's the dream coach that knows how to relay somebody's message. He's an incredible communicator. He's an incredible teacher. He understands the game. He's been around just about every scheme over the course of his career. I wouldn't say he's the most alpha type of personality, but he absolutely is a dream, like, right-hand man for somebody. So if Pete is looking for somebody that is just going to be able to teach and communicate his message, I think Ed's going to be a great candidate. And if I'm being totally honest with you, my guess is I think that's what Pete Carroll likes about it, because my guess is that Pete doesn't really want to reinvent the wheel, that he's got a way that he's done defense for years. And I'm guessing that he's not looking for somebody to come in and change that for him.
He's going to have to find somebody who can figure out how to unlock the potential of Jamal Adams, though. They gave up so much to get him, and they're just not getting enough out of him. And, you know, we'd heard Schlereth say yesterday with our afternoon show here that the safeties loved playing for him, and that was a big part of where his knowledge and creativity base lays. What would you do with Jamal Adams?
Oh, man, I think he's in the wrong scheme. I think he's in the wrong fit. It's really hard. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, Pete runs a boring defense, and he's been forced into using Jamal Adams a little bit more creatively than he has in years past. And you probably don't necessarily feel that, but I see it. I see him blitzing a little bit more often. I mean, I would get more creative, and that probably means you got to run more man coverage, and you got to be able to bring Jamal up into the box, use him a little bit more as a hybrid type of player. Of course, you want him blitzing over the course of the game. He's a tremendous pass rusher when he gets an opportunity to get after the QB. So I think the best coaches, they know how to adapt to the personnel that they have. And that's the biggest challenge that Pete Carroll's got right now, is he's got a player at safety that doesn't necessarily fit the mold of what he's had previously. You know, he's had great safeties. Certainly when I was there, Earl and Cam, fantastic players, but different players, not necessarily physical pass rushers. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, you made that trade. He's now gotten paid. He's got the money, and you got to find a way to use him to his strengths.
You guys want Russell Wilson in Denver?
Of course we want Russell Wilson. You know, we've got John Clayton who comes on our show here in Denver once a week. And, you know, for the last like 8 weeks, we've been like, all right, John, what's going on in Seattle? Is Pete getting fired?
Let me guess. No, it's stupid, exactly, is what he said.
Exactly. He gets mad at us. every single time. He's like, no, there's no way. No, that is absolutely crazy. Not happening. They're like, well, John, how come everybody's talking about it? He's like, well, they all got it wrong. I'm like, well, I don't want them to have it wrong, all right? So, like, give me something to believe in here, because Denver needs a stinking quarterback. And so, Russ, as far as I'm concerned, you're a great dude. You've had a great run in Seattle, but your run's up. Let's go. Put your foot down and get out the door.
What are you willing to give up? What are you willing to – let's make a deal. I'll play John Schneider. What are you willing to give up for Russell Wilson?
What do you want? I mean, seriously. I mean, Russell Wilson's probably got 8 or 10 years of football left in him if he really wants it. What do you want? You know, we were talking about Deshaun Watson last offseason and before everything, you know, went to hell. And it was like, yeah, we'll give you up 3 first-rounders. Okay, what else you want? You want Jerry Jeudy? Okay, you got it. I mean, there wasn't anything that you wouldn't give up. See, with Aaron Rodgers, of course I would draw a line in the sand, because you're talking about a 2 or 3 year championship window, but mm-hmm. Russell's got so much football left that, honestly, I mean, if you want 3 first-rounders, I'm in.
Give me John Elway's car dealership franchises, and if you don't mind, throw in Drew Lock just for fun, and maybe we'll find a deal. How's that sound?
Hey, if you want Drew, no problem. And the irony of that is that last offseason we were allegedly traded for Matthew Stafford, and then it fell through. And the rumors were that it fell through because they wanted Drew Lock and the Broncos didn't want to give him up. And it's like, are you kidding me? You're trading for his replacement, and you're saying that you let the deal walk because you didn't want to give up on Drew Lock? Sure, if you want Drew, he's in. Yeah, who else you want?
If you were the Seahawks, what would it take to give up Russell Wilson?
Well, I just wouldn't. There's no way I would, and I guess what it came down to is Russ really willing to be the bad guy? And my guess is he's probably not. So, you know, the big domino for me was going to see if they fired Pete or not. I did not expect them to, so I was not surprised. But if they fired Pete, I thought, okay, maybe they'll just they'll reset everything. But now that they brought him back, I mean, just honestly, if you're running that franchise, why in the world would you give up on Russell? You want to give him up? I'll ask you that.
Well, I don't. No, Russell's one of my favorite players I've ever watched. But the argument would be if either A, he just flat out doesn't want to be here, or B, he says, look, I'm never going to re-sign with you in 2 years. And you say, all right, can we either win a Super Bowl in 2 years? If you don't think you can, then you deal him now and try to set a different path back to the Super Bowl that is in 3 or 4 years rather than in 1 or 2. Otherwise, no, of course not. He's a Hall of Fame elite franchise quarterback, and they don't grow on trees.
All right. So, I mean, sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot here. It's your show. You're asking me questions, but... So do you think he's willing to put his foot down?
No, I don't think so. I think he's willing to have his agent try to do it for him, and he kind of tried that last year. And when Russ tried to go on Dan Patrick and kind of be a, you know, kind of speak his mind a little bit, it backfired. It's just not who he is, and he's certainly not going to Carson Palmer this thing. That's not Russell Wilson, right. And he's not going to, you know, he doesn't have Aaron Rodgers' ability to say, hey, I'm just going to go host Jeopardy, and that didn't even work for Rodgers. So I don't think he's got a real path to do that.
Well, why don't you pass my number? I'll tell them how much I love Seattle. I absolutely loved it. I think my wife and I would have, we would have moved there forever if I would have played there longer. I'm not even kidding. So I got nothing but love for Seattle, but I'll get him a nice place to stay here in Denver. And if he needs a place to live for a couple months, you can stay in the basement.
Yeah, he'll be there at the Columbus house. I think Russ could probably use the extra cash. He and Sierra don't have enough going on their own. Hey, seriously, man, right. This is fun. Right. Thank you, Tyler. We appreciate it. We'll talk again.
Anytime.
All right, see good Mike. Stuff. There's Tyler Palumbus from our sister station, 104.3 The Fan in Denver. And, of course, he played offensive line here for the Seahawks. He joins me there in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Tyler's interesting because he's sort of, you know, he'll tell it like he sees it and what he saw, and he's got kind of a different view than some others do. And that's great stuff on Pete, what he thinks they want to do here, and on the desire for Russell Wilson in Denver. When you hear stuff like that, you're just like, man, how could you even think about trading Russ? But again, it's a thought exercise, and I think it leads you down some interesting paths of what you've got to do if you're the Seahawks. Right now, let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
What does Pete really want to do? And as he goes through this defensive coordinator job search, what will it tell us about Pete's desire and his needs to change, remain the same, communicate differently? You just heard Tyler Palumbo say that he believes Pete Carroll doesn't really want to change his defense, that it's somewhat boring by nature, and that's not necessarily a negative. It's just what he believes works. Well, you're getting some different views of what Pete might want to do based on some of the candidates that are emerging. Yeah, if you were on the bandwagon that Pete doesn't want to make changes, the first two names that came out are certainly to that point. Clint Hurt, current defensive line coach. He's known as a really great communicator, wonderful relationships with players. He's one of the up-and-coming candidates. He's only 43 years old. I say only because, you know, that's my age. Ed Donatell is 64 years old. He's known Pete forever. He's mostly coached 3-4 defenses and worked under folks like Jim Harbaugh, Vic Fangio, etc. And you just heard Tyler Palumbo say that another great communicator who would probably be a good right-hand man to just implement Pete's system. You also got some familiar names. Gus Bradley's name has been out there. Pete inherited him in 2010 here, and they had tremendous success together. And then Michael Sean Dugar added a name that kind of takes us in a completely different direction. That's 38-year-old Chicago defense coordinator Sean Desai, who's got a very interesting background. He's a philosophy major. He's got a PhD in education, sees himself as really a teacher. They call him the professor in Chicago. So as you start looking through, you really get some completely different directions. Admittedly, for me, I'm a little biased towards Gus Bradley. I loved him when he was here. I think he's all of these things. He checks all the boxes. Great defensive communicator, understands Pete, knows the system, isn't married to it, though, and has done some other things and evolved it. He also had specifically great success integrating Derwin James, big-time hitting safety, into that Chargers defense. That's a player that has had some similarities to Jamal Adams. So I don't know if he's technically available because of the situation in Vegas, but he'd probably be my top choice. But I'm also intrigued by Desai. Because of the background, because of his youth, because of the creativity, because of just coming from a different world entirely, I just think his inclusion at the very least speaks to a process that's at least considering everybody and not just some of the obvious candidates who are familiar with this coach and want to run the same system.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Oh, another day and more speculation nationally regarding the future of Russell Wilson. This time it was ESPN's Jeremy Fowler who included Russ's future in a longer piece where league executives made predictions for this offseason. He's an exec. He has an exec saying he thinks the team is not as high on Russ as they say and that they could look to make a deal. Fowler speculates on New Orleans, Chicago, and the Giants as a few possibilities. No, this isn't a rumor or anything, just these comments and stories are interesting to me for a few reasons. One, they tell us what's out there. Who's trying to leak what? If an executive is saying this, maybe he's trying to lower the market because he wants to acquire Russ. Or maybe he's out there just trying to sow more discord. Who knows? Maybe the team's trying to get this out for whatever reason themselves. I don't know. And then secondly, it helps us consider how valuable we believe Russell Wilson to be. I think they're a better team with a Russell than they are without him. I don't even think that's debatable. The question becomes if you understand what Albert Breer said, and I played this sound for Brock, I don't know, 45 minutes ago or so, this sound can set you down a completely different direction.
I think the hedging from Russ's camp is not a great sign. Now, we'll see if they can work something out, but you know, there's been an acknowledgement for a while that this could be the last contract he'll do with the team.
If this is truly the last contract he will do with the Seahawks, you've got a two-year window to win another Super Bowl with Russell Wilson. If you think you can do that, and Brock, by the way, said he believes you can, then go for broke, sell out, and make it happen. And if you can't, then yeah, you probably try to recoup as much value as you can now and build towards something that can win the Super Bowl as soon as you can.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Lockout's still going on, so major league transactions are impossible. But we did get some interesting tidbits yesterday. First of all, the Mariners officially signed three international free agents, used their entire pool of money on just three players. They are infielders Michael Arroyo from Colombia, Martin Gonzalez from the Dominican Republic, and Cuban outfielder Lazaro Montez. All three are 17 years old. Arroyo probably stands out the most. He's a hitter who's got some serious upside. I love the approach, honestly. The farm system is where it is, so go big or go home. You can afford to gamble on a few players who have higher ceilings because you've got so much in your system. I love it. Carlos Correa deciding to switch representation to Scott Boras. His previous agency is William Morris, which is a Hollywood entertainment agency. And I guess they tried to build a baseball clientele. Didn't work out. Now they're cross purposes with the league because they were attempting to purchase minor league franchises. So that has not gone well. A couple of games into the NBA last night, Minnesota over New York. Warriors get back on track. They crush Detroit.
So if you're the Denver Broncos, Tyler Plumas said that you do whatever you can to get Russell Wilson. If you're the Eagles, the GM, Howie Roseman, just said Jalen Hurts has earned the starting spot in 2022.
Yeah, I saw that. Well, as they should. It makes them seem like they've got a great bargaining position, if indeed that's not the case. Right? I mean, I don't believe anything Howie Roseman says about that. Of course he should. Oh, yep. He's our guy.
It's the guy, yep.
Yeah, but if you're going to trade him, like, well, hey, we don't need that. We've got our guy, right? I mean, so, yeah, this is all leveraging, and who knows what to really believe. We had somebody ask me earlier whether or not the pool money that went to the
international players.
Yeah, so apparently, my understanding is that it is different. International signings are different from amateur draft signings, are different from MLB payroll. Those all come from different pools. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's sort of what I've been able to gather.
I think I
still
got more
questions.
Still
don't quite get it. All right. Well, hey, I'm trying. It's a slow process. One step at a time over there, Justin.
Well, we wouldn't have to be talking about this if it wasn't locked out. So
right.
Force
that's
us
right.
into this.
End this darn lockout. We can go do what we actually need to do. When you hear Tyler Plumas say that Donatel's kind of a right-hand man, wants to run Pete's scheme, but maybe could communicate it better, does that intrigue you?
Yeah, I think I'm more stuck on how many times he used the word boring to describe Pete's defenses.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a negative. I don't think he views that as a negative, right? I don't think what he's saying is it's boring doesn't necessarily mean that you don't like it. It just means that you're doing similar concepts over and over again, right? It's sort of a belief of we're going to do what we do and you have to adjust to me versus we're going to constantly adjust to you. We just do what we do and we think it works.
But he also said that Jamal Adams isn't a good fit
now,
for this
true.
Current defense. So that would lend itself to you need to find a defensive coordinator that does something a little bit different than what you're doing now.
I agree with that 100%. And so you kind of – I don't know that boring in and of itself is a negative when you're talking about a defense.
Yeah, boring doesn't mean inept, right?
Right. No, it doesn't. I mean, it's not like in life when like, oh, do you like that person? No, they're kind of boring. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. Like, you know, boring can mean steadfastly moving up and down the field on offense and doing what you want to do. Or on defense, yeah, it's boring because you run the same concept every time, but it works, so you shut them down. But I think that the point about Jamal Adams, if question one is how are you going to figure out Jamal Adams, well, running the boring defense probably isn't the best way to do it. So somebody who's creative, somebody who can really scheme that up and say, hey, I've got a plan for Jamal, that may be a lot more interesting. And so if you're looking at the three or four names that have come out, maybe Sean Desai's rises a little bit faster in your mind. I still love the Gus Bradley idea. It's not officially, he's not been officially linked here. He's still under contract with the Raiders, technically. I just think he brings so many of those positives to the table. And if they're, and plus he's a known quantity who's done it before and had success here. Gosh, there just seems like so many reasons to try to go after Gus if it's possible. All right, Matt Hasselbeck will join us coming up in a half hour. Of course, before we get there, former Seahawks wide receiver, host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, we'll talk to Michael Bumpus. What's he looking for out of that defensive coordinator spot? We'll ask him that and more next.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Couple of good texts here. Tim Duncan was boring. He was pretty good. He was boring. The Big Fundamental. What a great nickname.
Should rank boring players someday. That'd be good.
And then another text, absolutely right here from the 253. 2013 defense was boring. They were pretty good. Yeah, I don't think boring. I think it just means schematically boring. Like they don't do that many different things from play to play. Just, you know, do what they do really, really well. Just a different philosophy on how to succeed. That's what Tyler Plumas told us a couple of minutes ago. We're waiting on Michael Bumpus. He'll join us here in just a moment or two, having a little technical issue. So we'll talk to Bump coming up in a moment. And then, of course, John Clayton at 8:45, and then Matt Hasselbeck for the entire 9 o'clock hour. I'm a little upset, Justin. We have not received any recent reviews on Apple Podcasts.
No.
So I don't know if that means people have stopped going there, or sometimes those things get delayed. Like you'll see it like a few days later or something. I don't know if they like screen them to make sure that people are real.
There's an approval process.
What kind of a job do you think that is, where you're like screening all of the reviews given at Apple Podcasts?
Seems like not a fun one.
You think it's a real job, or is that something that a robot does?
It's a robot. They just look for swear words. And
stuff. Oh, that's it? Oh, well, that seems pretty easy. Okay, you could just write a program for that. Let's talk to Michael Bumpus, former Seahawks wide receiver, of course, and host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. He joins me here on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Bump, what's going on, man?
What's up, man? Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Can't complain. Wild card weekend was what I expected. No real surprises there, but still good to watch football.
It was weak, though, wasn't it? That was a weak slate of football games when it was all said and done.
Man, when you looked at the matchups, you thought it was going to be better than what it was. I think the Bengals-Raiders game was okay. The Niners-Dallas game was all right, but you felt Tampa was going to do their thing. With the Chiefs, it was just how big they were going to win. I didn't think the Steelers had a chance. And then the Arizona Cardinals game kind of ended up the way I thought as well.
Yeah, that one was, I guess, the only one I thought would be a little closer than that. But gosh, Cliff Kingsbury just seems to have this now becoming a thing where every year, and it happened at Texas Tech, and now it's happening in Arizona, they just crater in the second half of the year. Why do you think that is?
Man, it starts with leadership and focus when it comes down to crunch time. And, you know, I'm not really surprised. You look at what Kingsbury did in college, it's the same thing, right? He went to a couple of bowl games. The second half of the season, his teams usually teeter a bit. And that's what we saw there. The worst thing I saw about that game was Kyler Murray's leadership, man. He looked like a whiny kid out there whenever nothing went his way. His facial expressions, I mean, it was wild watching him play. If I was a veteran on that team, I'd pull him to the side and be like, man, like, you're our leader. You know, show some positivity and try to rally us up. But for some reason, man, these guys were able to get after Kyler Murray. Only sacked twice, but it seemed like he was always under pressure. They're not an on-time offense. That's the thing about Arizona. It's rare that he just hits his third step, boom, and lets it go. He's looking for the big play, so he's got to learn, man. And Kingsbury's got to learn if he's here. You got to get some on-time plays going to get your offense moving.
You know who he needed on the sideline to talk to him was Doug Baldwin. He needed this speech.
Look at me. It's one play at a time, all right? There's no rush on anything. We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you, okay? So strap your up and let's get this. So let's do this.
He needed Doug on the sideline.
Yeah, he did. That's exactly what he needed, because that's the truth, man. I mean, if you got the ball 90% of the time, the game is literally in your hands. And your decision-making, your demeanor, your leadership affects the game completely. And I hope he looks at the film and he learns that.
We've been talking all morning about defense coordinator candidates, or even more, less about the people and more about the qualities that you're looking for. What are you looking for in a defensive coordinator or any coordinator that you're going to play for?
Well, I want to go young, man. And young doesn't mean you need the hot 31-year-old that's been out there. You know, 40s are good. You know, a guy who has seen old school football and has experienced it and has also knows what this game is today and what these players' attributes bring to the game. So I want to see a young guy, and I want to see a guy who is a secondary guy. The only problem with that, Mike, is that he has to work directly with Pete Carroll. Even if you're a D coordinator, you have to work with Pete Carroll. But Pete is a DB guy, and he has his philosophies. He's been around a long time, and who knows how willing he is to bend with some of his stuff. But I'd like to see a younger guy, a defensive back guy, to hold down that back end, because our DBs have had a rough couple of years.
One of the phrases we hear a lot is that coach is a great communicator, right? And that was maybe one of the issues on the defense this year. Who was the best communicating coach that you ever had?
Best communicating coach I ever had. You know what? It was Mike Levenseler at Washington State. And he wasn't like a thesaurus where he could explain things so beautifully in a bunch of different ways. What made him a great communicator is he was straight up with you, man. Whether you liked it or not, you knew exactly where he stood. You knew exactly what he expected from you. And he didn't beat around the bush. So I really appreciated that about Mike Levenseler. I've coached with coaches who will smile in your face and throw you under the bus when they walk around the corner, literally having players come up and say, man, coach said this and that. I'm like, man, I just saw the dude. I thought we were good. You know what I mean? But yeah, Mike Levenseler was straight up, man. Whether you liked it or not, he kept it real with you.
How about the most creative coach you ever played for?
Most creative. I would say creative. You're talking about scheme-wise?
Sure, yeah, because I think that's where a lot of people are going with this hire, right? They really want this person to have some level of creativity for whatever reason.
Yeah, and that's the thing, man. Like, creativity in today's game is, in my opinion, a lot more creative than it was when I was playing even, 10 years ago. Because you see that, you see routes that you're not used to seeing. You see combinations you're not used to seeing, or that I didn't see growing up. So when it comes to creativity, the creativity looks a bit different then than it does now. But I have to say, it's Mike Holmgren, man. I mean, he would come up to the podium and break down plays and explain it beautifully and say, this is what we're going to do if we have to adjust. And there's always an answer. Mike always had an answer for what the defense was trying to do. So yeah, I got to tip my hat off, man, to one of the greatest, Mike Holmgren.
I was watching, we're all watching the Rams game against the Cardinals. You talked a little bit about Kyler Murray on the other side of the ball. What did you make of OBJ? And has this been a bit of a career renaissance for him since we were talking about him a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago?
Yeah, man. And I love it because people were so ready to write off OBJ. And there's reason why, because he's a flashy guy.
I was ready. Put me in the category. I was ready to write him off.
And because he doesn't necessarily get along with everybody, right? The way he goes about his business might rub you the wrong way. Then he goes to Cleveland and plays with Baker Mayfield, who I feel is not a very good quarterback. He's a decent quarterback, but not a great one. And he kind of fizzles away. This is a prime example of having a new car but not knowing how to drive it, right? I bought a new truck. My wife will not touch that thing. She does not know how to drive my truck. Like, that's what I felt like in Cleveland. Cleveland got this new whip, this new car, and they're like, all right, what do we do? You know, what are his features? They didn't read the book. They didn't take it on a test drive. They just threw it out there and said, it has to work. Now you take Odell Beckham to Sean McVay, and he's like, I know exactly how to drive this car. I'm like, I've been waiting for this car. This is one of my dream cars. And I got it matched up with my other car I have in the garage right now, in Cooper Cup. So I think it comes down to philosophy, and then having a quarterback who isn't afraid to take risks, and has been around the block a few times and knows how to get guys open when it comes to moving the safeties and checking down and all that stuff. So it's a great combination, man. You team Odell Beckham up with a young coordinator who is creative and a quarterback who's a veteran and can make plays, and this is what you get.
Bump, you're bringing it today, man. We could go longer. We got to run, unfortunately. I got to go talk to John. But this was a powerhouse performance. Thanks for coming on today, man. We'll do it next week.
Appreciate you, man. Have a good one.
All right, there you go. There's Michael Bumpus, former wideout, of course, here with the Seahawks, and a lot of good stuff there from Bump. All right, we are going to talk to the professor. Anybody miss him yesterday? I did. A day without John on the middle of the week, it just didn't feel right. I mean, Bert was great. I love talking to him, but it just didn't feel right without John. So we got to get his take on what's going on here. Here are some of the names that may be considered for the Seahawks' open defense coordinator spot. We got a lot to run through with John Clayton. Don't go anywhere. The professor's next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mike.
We missed you yesterday. Glad to have you back. I know it was a busy day of Hall of Fame discussions and voting, etc. How was it yesterday?
Long. Went about almost 8 hours.
Wow.
So, I mean, we started early at 7, and then, you had to get onto Zoom earlier than that, and then it went to, 2:33, so it was a long day.
Who were you guys talking about? Who were some of the top candidates for the Hall of Fame this year?
Well, I mean, again, Tony Boselli is a top candidate. It's a pretty good list because we got 15 guys that are all pretty close and all that stuff. We'll see about Torrey Holt and Reggie Wayne and guys like that.
That's a good debate between those two.
Yeah, it really is. And then, of course, then you throw in Andre Johnson from Houston.
Jeez.
So it's like, I mean, again.
So of those three, how would you rank those three?
I'm not going to get into that.
You can't? Are you not allowed to?
Not allowed to.
You're not allowed to even say?
No.
I'll rank them for you. I'll go Torrey Holt. That is really hard. All three of those guys are like almost exactly the same ability level in my mind. But because of, I'll go Torrey Holt, Andre Johnson was sort of more of a number one, right? Because Holt had Isaac Bruce on the other side, and Reggie Wayne obviously had Marvin Harrison on the other side for a big part of his career. But Andre Johnson was sort of the man, so maybe I need to go with him first.
And he didn't have any quarterbacks.
No, and he still was incredibly successful. But the other two guys really were – I'm going to go still Torrey Holt, number one. He really, I think, made that greatest show on turf go.
Mm-hmm. So there and, of course, we got guys like Richard Seymour – then Rondé Barber. I mean, the list is pretty good.
That's a pretty good list. Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm jealous. Yeah. That seems like a really, really cool
game. But it was long, I can tell you that.
I believe it. All right, what about what the Seahawks did? We haven't talked since they made their move with Ken Norton Jr. and Andre Curtis. What do you think they will do now?
I mean, again, I'm not surprised because, again, you figure there has to be some change. Yeah, because obviously Pete's coming back and John Snyder's coming back and Russell Wilson's coming back. And so it was only natural that Ken Norton Jr. and also the passing coordinator on defense were let go. I mean, it's actually they've got five people on the list right now. And, you know, Clint Hurt can be promoted. You know, they got, you know, certainly I'm kind of intrigued by Ed Donatell, who is a defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos. He's been a coordinator at four different places, and I like him. He's a good person, smart coordinator, all those different things. Denver's defense was, you know, one of the better in the league last year, so he's intriguing. Then, you know, you got, again, it's like, so, you know, I think that they're getting together a pretty good. Marquand Manuel's in the list.
Mm-hmm. You'll also hear Sean Desai is another name from emerging out of Chicago. What's up with Gus Bradley? He's probably my favorite candidate for this.
Agreed.
I know he's still under contract with the Raiders. What are the possibilities there?
I mean, it's definitely the possibility. The question is going to be what's going on with the head coach. Is Rich Bisaccia, because if Rich keeps the job, which right now doesn't look great, then all of a sudden what you're looking at is Gus will be available. And if he stays, he's probably going to be the defensive coordinator. So it's like that's a little bit uncertain. But I think, you know, Gus Bradley fits so well because he's done it here before.
Yeah, I really would love to an opportunity to have him back. You talk about great people. I think Gus is such a good communicator, really good person, has the perfect combination of knowing Pete's scheme but also having done quite a bit of other stuff. It just and he's not, you know, trying this on for the first time like Shane Waldron was. I like some of the other names. I think Desai's a really interesting guy and an interesting kind of direction for them to walk down. But Gus just makes so much sense if you could pull it off.
I know. And again, it's like so far they've not put in a request for him that we know of. And so it's kind of a wait and see thing. But that's the thing. I mean, once you get past the first wild card weekend, that's when you start seeing, you know, the escalation of who's available and who's not. Because now, you know, because you notice that, like, for example, in the head coaching circle, most of the guys that were being interviewed or at least getting a chance to have a chance for some of these head coaching jobs or guys in the playoffs. Well, now, I mean, Dan Quinn, I mean, he's now totally available with Dallas losing. I mean, he's got four interviews this week and is probably the leading candidate in Denver. And so it's like, I mean, it's picking up immensely.
What the hell? Did you see the Malik McDowell story?
Yeah, unbelievable.
So what happened? He's arrested for what? Aggravated battery and a whole bunch more.
Well, the big thing for him, he was naked in a schoolyard.
He can't do that. Why was he naked? John, you should know the answer to this. Why was he naked in a schoolyard?
Now, do you think I can read the mind of Malik McDowell?
I hope not, no.
No, it's like, I mean, and then, of course, I mean, he was very physical with a police officer, and so he's in deep,
while he
deep
was
trouble.
Naked.
While he was naked, yeah.
That's an uncomfortable
Yeah, because,
spot.
Again, it's like, you know, Once they heard about some naked guy in a schoolyard,
they get down there fast.
Yeah, and it's like he didn't have enough time to get some clothes on.
Yeah, you don't want to be naked. I mean, first of all, you don't want to be naked in public. Second of all, you really don't want to be naked near a school. I first saw the public exposure thing and assumed, oh, okay, maybe he was, you know, public urination or something, and he did it too close to a school or something like that. But no, that's a really bad deal. He's really, I mean, could he still be in the NFL, do you think, next year?
I debate it. I mean, because, again, it's like he was lucky enough to get back and do so well with Cleveland this past year. And, you know, because, again, he started 14 games. But to come back and, and again, it's like I don't know if he was visiting down there, if he lives down there, anything of that nature. But it's like, you know, where is his clothes?
Yeah, somebody should know the answer and find that out. Who's going to be the quarterback in Pittsburgh next year?
It's open. I mean, it could be Jimmy Garoppolo. It could be, you know, the Pitt quarterback. Could be a draft choice. I mean, you know, they have Mason Rudolph on the roster, but he's not that good.
No.
So it's like it's wide open at the moment.
You see Dak apologize for his comments about the refs. That had to happen, right?
Oh, it had to.
That's not a very Dak thing. I'm a little surprised that came out of him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he's caught up in the emotion, but it's like, how does the emotion allow comments like that where it's like, good for them throwing things at the officials and stuff. What are you talking about? I mean, it's like, good God.
Good stuff, John. Glad to have you back. We missed you yesterday. Good to make everything in the world normal again. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
All right, John Clayton every morning at 8:45. That's a tough little debate, by the way. Torrey Holt, Torrey Holt, Andre Johnson, or Reggie Wayne? I haven't looked at the numbers, so I guess I would have to go do that. But that's a really hard question, right? Rank those three? All of them were dominant in their own way. I mean, I think the Andre Johnson thing, he didn't have the quarterbacks the other two guys did, and he didn't have the other guy on the other side. Maybe I do need to go Andre Johnson number one, but Torrey Holt was so good. I thought Torrey Holt with the Rams and everything he brought to that offense, the speed combination, and obviously, you know, he had Isaac Bruce on the other side, but geez.
Who played the longest out of all them?
That's a good question. Might be Reggie Wayne, I would bet, probably actually played the longest. That would be my guess without looking at the numbers, but pretty cool little conversation. That sounds like fun. I'm sorry, you know, it takes so long for poor John, but that does seem like a lot of fun to go and debate Hall of Fame numbers like that in a small room with people that are super invested in it. It's a cool way the NFL does it. So, all right, we do have a full hour with the great Matt Hasselbeck. He will join me coming up next. We want to talk about Pete, his loyalty, the new defensive coordinator spot. We got a lot to get to with Matt. We'll do it all together next. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.